Champion players, champion club. Melbourne wins another one.
Yes, it is! Reece Carey brings up her 200 in style.
Oh, Sam Kerr!
For all your sports news, reviews, and interviews, you listen to the Sports Desk here on Sin.
That's right, you are joined in the studio by Caleb and Liam for the very first Spolitics show of the year. Spolitics is, of course, our Wednesday-themed Sports Desk show.
Liam, I love the name. Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks. Is this your first time on Spolitics?
Yes, it is my first time.
Oh, great. Well,
they say you always remember your first, so hopefully this is memorable.
They do, they do. Today we're going to be talking all kinds of sport. Listening to that intro there, I was getting a little bit excited for such a massive 2018 of sport.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Looking back on 2017, listening to those commentary grabs, just so exciting. But today we're going to be talking a bit of tennis, a bit of cricket, a little bit of AFL, bit of basketball to wrap it all off, and maybe even a little bit of rugby at the end. We'll see how we go.
Sounds like a nice day.
Going to be a stacked show. Straight off the bat, tennis. Federer's just won his 20th Grand Slam.
Yes, and as what I pointed out Monday, he has a 66.6% winning rate in Grand Slam.
66.6? Grand Slam finals, yep. Really?
Yep, won 20, lost 10.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And obviously in the girls, it was Caroline Wozniacki winning her first yep. Wasn't it? Which was pretty impressive. She was number one in 2010, I think it was, but hadn't won a Grand Slam. And
it's always good when you see two players as number one. It's always a bit more exciting. As much as everyone loves seeing Federer now because he's an old man, it's, you know, you like seeing two players who've never won one fight it out. It's extra bit more exciting.
How long was Wozniacki on top? Was it like 2 years?
I think so.
By the way, I'm Ben. Thanks.
Sorry,
thanks,
Ben.
Ben, when did you walk in?
I don't know. I think I was a bit late. Sorry for that, guys.
Apologies,
I'm
Ben.
Here as well, so thanks, Caleb. Yeah, Wozniacki, she was on top for about 2 years, and there was a lot of scrutiny on her, I remember, for not winning at a Grand Slam. Yeah. So it's finally good to see her win it. Does she move back to number one, or she...
not even 100%.
No. So I think Halep's got points on her. But nevertheless, though, Wozniacki finally breakthrough. But yeah, as you said, Federer just 20.
Incredible. 36 years old. And obviously everyone's saying that he's the undisputed GOAT, the greatest of all time. Where does he go from here? Do you think he's got more Grand Slams up in his belt?
Well, yes, and people were always already asking when he really retire.
Mm.
He's missed two Grand Slams since 1999. So he's pretty much injury-free.
Yeah.
He's not like Nadal with a bum knee or...
No.
I think Djokovic is relevant with his knee as well.
Yeah, he looked like he was in a lot of pain against Cilic in that game.
Yeah, he's missed one in 2016 and one in 1999.
Wow.
So, I think he can go on to his 40.
Yeah,
I remember in the early 2010s, which is weird to say, we're almost at the end of the 2010s, thinking, oh, he's going to retire soon. But no, he's, you know, winning. He's won three in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he's got at least another 2-3 years. I mean, if he gets another big injury, people start talking about retirement. But he could be like a Tim Duncan of the NBA or something like that. Play until he's 40.
Dustin Fletcher,
yeah. But it just seems like he's not getting any worse at what he's doing. He's playing some of the best tennis. And another thing is he's just absolutely universally adored.
Oh, he is.
I couldn't name another sports person from my short time that has been more universally adored. Even Michael Jordan was talking with my friends yesterday, and he said even Michael Jordan still had... big critics and people that didn't really
love
him.
Same with LeBron James?
Yeah, big time.
It's when you move into the 30s in that legend status where people start to like you.
Yeah.
No matter what sport you're in, people start to like you more older you get.
Yeah, and he's just such a humble, modest player. Obviously, he wasn't at the start of his career, but...
Really, wasn't he?
No, so a lot of people will talk about his early days where he was a little bit like a...
Curious.
Just had a bit of a temper, but he's hoping that we saw a little bit of Nick Kyrgios turn a new leaf at this Australian Open with his attitude, and he was getting a lot. He was getting a lot of applause for his new attitude,
being humble.
Yeah, it's great. So maybe we'll see Nick Kyrgios enter the his Roger Federer phase.
Well, I'm surprised that Nick Kyrgios is 22. He's a year older than me.
There's so much talk about him, and he's, like you said, he's only 22. It feels like he's been in the tennis world for about, I don't know, maybe 6+ years, potentially more than that.
I think he's nearly 30.
And it's probably because he's got so much pressure. I mean, we've got a lot of expectation on Australian tennis players. We've had so many great past players, you know, Pat Cash, Rafa.
Will Labor.
Yeah, Labor, and obviously Hewitt. Pat Rafter, sorry, not Rafa. So there's a lot of pressure on him. We really want a successful talent, and Kyrgios is, to be fair, he's taken on a lot of that. And I mean, like you said, he's only 22. Federer started... I don't think he was as flamboyant as Kyrgios, but could we see Kyrgios maybe turn into, not Federer, but maybe like on this, not on the same level, but kind of reach that number one world ranking, plenty of Grand Slams maybe in the next 2 years, after seeing his campaign in the Australian Open?
Definitely, I think so.
He has a bit of a, he's 22, he's still got many years to come, but he's
heaps of time.
That little hump getting past the fourth round.
Yeah.
I think he's only done it once. I think it was like at Wimbledon, US Open 1 year.
Uh-huh.
Apart from that, he's pretty much only...
It was Wimbledon. Quarters.
Yeah, he just can't get past that little hump. But at 22, he's Australia's best tennis player by far.
In the men's, that is,
in the men's,
absolutely.
By far.
I find it interesting to compare it, like you said, only a year older than yourself, very much around my age as well. I don't think any Australians could really say that they'd put themselves in a similar situation and be able to act humbly. Like, probably all of his life he's been the number one tennis player in Australia. So, and who's to say, I don't mind a little bit of personality. And that's
I'm a huge fan of him. I've always backed him, even when he's been down. Lucy knows this. Lucy's not that much of a fan of him. I am. Sorry, Luce. But yeah, love Kyrgios. But to be fair, he was a bit unlucky. To get the best out of Grigor Dimitrov in the Oz Open. Was it fourth round? Because Dimitrov lost the next round anyway. So, a bit unlucky there for Kyrgios. But I just love his maturity, because usually you'd see him, if he was down two sets to love, he'd often just give up and just throw in the towel, walk away. But he came back, won that third set, and then took the fourth set to yet another tiebreaker. Yeah. So, that maturity shows a lot of signs for me. For Kyrgios becoming a future superstar, potentially.
And the pressure on Kyrgios is this. Apart from Hewitt, in the last 20 years, Australia really haven't had a superstar tennis player.
Exactly. That's why the pressure,
When I looked a few days ago, I went through all the Grand Slam winners, and pretty much after the 70s, Australia just dies out until, this is the men's, of course, dies out until Hewitt.
Yeah.
I think the last one was...
It would be in the women's.
Yeah, Samantha Stowers was the last Australian to win a Grand Slam.
2010, I think.
Yeah. And she's dropped off the map completely.
Yeah.
Apart from that, no Australians come close.
Well,
Philippoussis did a couple, but he would have been before Hewitt.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's no one, that's why there's so much pressure on Kyrgios. But speaking of other young talent, well, lack of young talent, I guess we could say, in this player, Bernard Tomic, he's become the first player to yell out the words, "I'm a celebrity, get me out of here," on that show on Channel 10 last night, The Jungle. He's out of there.
Been watching the show, Ben?
That was the only reason why I was watching it.
I
had a bit of hope in him. I don't know why I did. I was just curious to see. I think, Liam, you were also just curious to see how he'd go in the jungle. But
kind of talking to you by Josh Gibson.
Yeah, he did. Really? And that seemed to just get to him. And he's gone.
Also, have you, like, they posted a photo on Twitter. Compare the rigs. Oh, Josh Gibson. Nice six-pack there. Bernard Tomic just...
Right.
Skinny run.
For someone like myself who hasn't been watching the show, how's he been performed, or how did he perform before obviously leaving this morning or overnight?
Typical Bernard Tomic, really.
Right.
Yeah. Nothing new.
First night he was a bit stiff. He copped jumping snake?
Something.
Oh, I can't remember what it was called, but the snake just kept biting him. So, and he was the last one, so he cost him the challenge, but he's a bit stiff there.
Okay.
But other than that, he's just been his normal self, and it's good to see him out there, I guess.
Yeah. It's interesting all of the... after leaving last night, a lot of people saying that he needs to have a bit of a break.
I think he does, yeah.
Not coming back to tennis is probably an option, because he has raised a lot of his issues about his depression, hasn't he? Quite serious.
He even said on the show that he's pretty much he hasn't had a childhood. He's been
which is fair, because tennis lives are just such an individual sport. You pretty much got to be in it since you were 8, and you're just training vigorously every day. So I do see where he's coming from there.
Yeah, definitely. And he even said, I think he said something along the lines of that this is the only time he got to really have to himself where he wasn't followed by media and reflected a fair bit, which might be good for him.
12 months off, just relax.
100%. If this has brought anything up with you and depression, please give Lifeline a ring on 13 11 14. 13 11 14.
Here on the Sport Desk with Caleb, Liam, and Ben.
And why here?
When did Ben get in the studio?
Good morning, Ben.
Thank you. I'm here. That's beautiful.
Just confirming Ben is in the studio. I forgot Ben when I introed this show about 10 minutes ago. So
even
Ben.
Though I'm like, what, a metre away yeah. from you, somehow I'm invisible.
Sorry, man. I am
wearing a red jacket. The studio is a bit red carpet around here. Might have camouflage, yeah. but...
I blended like, into the background.
Bit,
sorry.
Bit of cricket now.
Yes. Time for cricket. Australia obviously lost
a
their...
fantastic record.
lost... their most recent ODI in the new Perth Optus Stadium, which took them to 4-1, I think was the aggregate score yep. over the series. Yeah. But more scarily was over 12 months, they've just won 2 of the 13 completed matches, and they've now dropped to 5th in the ICC one-day world rankings.
Which would be their lowest in a while, I think.
Have to be since their World Cup win, I reckon.
Yeah.
Serious concerns for Australia in the one day and their white ball in general. And it just sort of asks questions, what's wrong with Australia and their white ball format?
I just don't think we have a steady one day team.
Yep.
Like we have a steady test team, and that's why we're so good. Mm-hmm. England has a steady one day team, and I remember watching it. I think it was the second one, and they were talking about how after England didn't make the finals in the World Cup or something, they buckled down and took the one days more seriously than they took any other format.
Yep.
And now they have a serious one-day team where Australia still kind of player in, player out. They yeah. don't have a set one-day team like uh-huh. if we do test.
Yeah, and I'd love to bring up the point that Australia's policy at the moment is to prioritise the baggy green and prioritise red ball cricket. They've always come.
Or pink ball.
Pink ball. Yep, they've come out and they've actually said that we want to support. We want everyone's priority to be test cricket. Which makes it interesting that this week Chris Lynn came out and said that he will not be pursuing a test cricket game or debut, and he just wants to solely focus on T20 cricket.
Which is fantastic. I
yeah.
There's three formats. We don't need someone playing all three. I know David Correct. Warner was the exception, where he started at T20 and then moved to test. But not everyone's a David Warner.
Exactly. And I think the maybe the Australian cricket public and the selectors are a little bit...
Old-fashioned,
and they love the idea of everyone being a Dave Warner. Everyone can play all three forms. Their national side can stay the same.
Could you imagine Morkland Finch playing Test?
No.
He's a 2020 player. Yeah.
A truck.
He doesn't know what a block is, really.
I think this will be a move that's made more common now in Australian cricket. I think, like you said, basically... as cricket fans, we still expect players to... we have this mantra that, okay, you got to play at the bag of green. That's it.
Yeah,
you've made the pinnacle. But now with the amount... and this has to be talked about now. The amount of money that's on offer in T20 cricket. I mean, it's really, really hard to pass up on that opportunity. And still, T20 is incredibly competitive. And, I mean, you can make a career just out of that. And it's great. It's actually really good to see Chris Lynn just be that honest and... give up his Queensland contract because, like he said, he actually said that he wanted to give it to someone who wants, like a 19-year-old who wants to come through the system, actually wants to play for the baggy green, unlike him. He just wants to play the T20 circuit, and credit to him. He's good at that, and that should be perfectly fine from an Australian cricket public's point of view.
Actually, talking about that, like I remember watching, I actually watched the Brisbane Heat their last game against the Renegades, and there was a player in their team that I thought would never see play 2020 cricket, which was Renshaw. The way he played test cricket, he's such an old-fashioned batsman where it takes him a day and a half to score 10 runs.
Yeah, yeah.
And the scene played 2020 just baffled me.
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree.
So he's
how did he go? Did he bat quickly or was he...
Yeah, he got out for 22 and like 10 balls or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe he can bring some of that aggression to test cricket.
Might find his way back into the squad.
Oh, hopefully. I really like Renshaw.
Really great interview, that Chris Lynn one. The last thing I wanted to talk about was he mentions Phil Hughes and he talks about him being his best mate. Really, really honest chat with Chris Lynn. And he says after Phil Hughes' tragic passing in 2014, it put everything into perspective. And he said he just wants to... do things that he wants to do. So good on him for coming out and admitting that he doesn't really aspire to play in the test team. And hopefully we have, for the sake of Australian cricket, I think if we have more Chris Lynns, people that take their T20 seriously, we might be a little bit stronger for the upcoming T20 World Cup.
Well, we've never been good at T20s.
No,
really.
No. Been shocking.
Which is, I'm weird. Because I never pictured 2020 as an international one. I always pictured 2020 as, the BBL.
Big Bash and IPL.
Yeah. I know.
Do we need this? I remember listening to this last night on SEN. Do we actually need to have all these one-off international T20s, or can we just reserve the international T20s for like a World T20?
I think, yeah, just a World T20.
Well, so, wouldn't it make sense to have more international T20s so that our Australian team can be playing together more often?
Remember last year, we had a T20 the day before we had our first test against India.
And exactly. And this is going to happen with us in the South Africa. The last T20 against England, I believe it is, that'll actually be a couple of days prior to us playing against South Africa.
Yeah, so all those players won't be in the team.
Yeah, is it necessary? Because there's talk about just keeping them, just those domestic tournaments, because there's enough there and then they can actually focus on the test cricket per se.
I think Caleb, I think it, you know, should just be safe for the World Cup. You think there should be more of it?
As long as their scheduling allows for it.
Don't make it too close to another game.
Speaking of scheduling, Eddie Maguire came out on Triple M a couple of days ago suggesting that, because there's been all this talk about extending the Big Bash, adding more games, adding more teams. His talk is that you just keep it the way it is. However, what he'd like to see is after the Big Bash, maybe have a week-long carnival type tournament where it's State of Origin. So he loves. We know how much Eddie Maguire loves State of Origin. So it'll be the best Australian players. So you know your Steve Smiths, your David Warners, representing their states in a T20 carnival that lasts a week. What do we make of that? Firstly, do we agree with his comments that the Big Bash needs to remain the same? It shouldn't be extended. And secondly, what do we think of that State of Origin week?
I think maybe it should stay the same. If you get another team, maybe make it a little bit longer. But with the State of Origin thing, the reason why we like the Rugby League State of Origin is because of the fights.
Yeah.
we can say we love the gameplay, but
we love the banter as well, especially on the New South Wales and the Queensland Facebook pages in particular. I remember there's a post that's circulating across the Facebook sphere now again. After the first game, New South Wales, they started bagging the Queensland defence, and then obviously Queensland went on to win the game and got back at them. But the banter.
9 out of 10, yeah.
Yeah, the banter between the two states is just incredible, and it's just something that is missing in, obviously, like the AFL sphere, but it could be so beneficial for cricket, and cricket's such a nationally supported and loved sport.
It's a gentleman game.
I don't see why not.
I don't think it's a gentleman game. You know, you don't see Steve Smith, you know, chuck his bat at Matthew Wade or something.
Yeah.
There's no that animosity.
But seriously though, is there any other? I think soccer may be up there in terms of like World Cup and stuff. But is there any other sport where we get behind the national team as passionately and as much as cricket?
No.
Nah, I agree 100%.
Yeah. So imagine breaking that off into State of Origin. How good? Could that be?
Yeah, I think it's definitely got legs. And if it gets more. More of our international players playing T20 cricket,
which is what we want to see.
Exactly. More David Warner playing T20 cricket. Exciting.
But isn't that what we used to have before the BBL? We had the Victoria Bushrangers play T20, New South Wales, they all played.
I can't even remember.
Yeah, it was, but there were still international players. But like, it obviously wasn't as popular back then because T20 was just starting, and now obviously the revamped Big Bash and all that.
But yeah, see, I don't know how. I disagree with referees. I just don't know how it will go. I think a gentleman's game like cricket wouldn't be able to handle the in-your-face the State of Origin is. It's very trash-talking.
I'd like it.
I don't think it has to. I don't think it has to follow the
doesn't have to be
the brutality
like
of yeah.
Well, I don't think we're going to see punch-ups on the cricket field.
No, Shane Warne and
Nice, you know, bounces towards your head.
Yeah. I just want to see the best Australian players, and this is what Eddie was saying, the best Australian players playing. So
that'd be huge crowds. They'd sell out.
Sorry, I'm just going to quickly go back to the Big Bash. Your thoughts on the length, because Eddie spoke with KP, and KP mentioned a good point. If weeks, because the Big Bash, obviously, there's nowhere near enough pay as like the IPL for, say, like a Caribbean Premier League. Because they're only getting, the internationals are getting only a couple hundred thousand dollars. He says that if the Big Bash is extended, it may deter international players from actually participating in the competition due to the lack of pay, and that the length of the tournament at the moment is just about perfect. So are we in agreement with this?
As a fan, I think I certainly feel like the length at the moment's fine. Like I certainly don't feel fatigued with the cricket, even though it's been on every day since Boxing Day or something like that. I think it's perfect length, and like you said, if it starts scaring away international players, I think that can't be great, because honestly, I don't think it was the most exciting Big Bash season we've had so far. I don't think there was too many close games, not as many sixes.
Well, there wasn't very much of Chris Lynn. No, that's pretty much.
That's the problem.
Yeah, the Bash Brothers weren't really there. Yeah.
No, exactly. Yeah. So I
think it was another Perth dominated season, like all the other seasons
as
before.
As usual, predicted.
It's just boring old.
Do you keep the same or?
I said depends if you get teams. Mm. If more teams, if you go it, then you can, you know, the team will get more money. But at the moment, yeah, keep it how it is.
Fair enough.
Instead of getting new teams, like they played, the Renegades played in Geelong. I don't know why there's two teams in Melbourne, both called Melbourne. It's actually the same issue with the A-League as well, having two teams called Melbourne.
Same in Sydney, Sydney Sixers, Sydney Thunder. Do you think that the Renegades could potentially move to Geelong?
I think they should
move
to Geelong. Yeah.
They probably will. Yeah.
Simmons Stadium is a good-looking stadium, even though it's not called Simmons Stadium anymore.
What's it called now?
It's like ABC
GMHBA. Yeah.
Weird name.
Bring back Skilled Stadium. Just call Cadinia
Park. Yeah, Cadinia Park, pretty much.
All right, guys, that wraps up cricket. After this, we'll be talking some AFL.
You're on Sports Desk with Ben Liam and Caleb talking politics, and we're just about to jump into some AFL. Going to talk a little bit about AFLX, as I can see you guys are absolutely chomping at the bit. Liam in particular, you can't wait, can you?
Well, him and Michael were
over the moon, yeah.
Jesus, I could not get an absolute word in. Those guys were incredible about the AFLX. Their excitement for it.
Oh, we were, yeah. Oof.
Liam, cash grab, or is it a genuine opportunity for the game to grow?
If it succeeds, it can be one of those things where you're like, yeah, it's completely intentional. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's a cash grab.
Bit of a cash grab?
Yeah, bit of a cash grab.
What do you reckon, Ben? Do you reckon it's got legs?
I reckon it's a bit of both. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's clearly there for a little bit of a cash grab, but the fact that they're promoting it and they're really, really, really promoting it on the basis of that it's played on a soccer field, that's probably where the genuine opportunity for the game to grow comes into the equation, because we know around the world there's obviously not that many oval-style pitches.
Yes.
And there's heaps of soccer, and soccer is known as the world game. So if you can bring AFL to a soccer field, I don't see why not. This could be an opportunity to grow the game, maybe.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited by... I kind of want to just see the first round and then be able to say, okay, that was pretty fun, or that was just like the weirdest experiment that never really worked. It's been interesting to watch the public's response to it, because it has been sort of shot down pretty quickly. It doesn't seem like many people are that keen for it. And then obviously it seems to a lot of people are concerned that it might overshadow the AFL women's as well, being played around the same time. And then people are saying, well, why can't those funds be put into the AFL women's? I think that I would love to see the AFL clubs put their best players on for AFLX.
Well, that'd make it exciting. I was exactly about to say that.
Will they do that?
Well, I think Sydney's already kind of deflated the AFLX by saying most of their big names probably won't play.
Really?
Mm. Yeah. You know, especially Sydney probably has the best midfield, so it'd be very good with the running.
Imagine saying Buddy playing on that soccer field. You could probably score from, what, halfway or something.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, you get 10 points from kicking it outside the 40-metre mark. So
Sydney,
I feel like
Sydney would easily be the highest-scoring team if Buddy was playing.
Well, Buddy takes the kick-ins. You'd almost back to run.
Just go the barrel.
Take on Cale Hooker.
Oh, how could Dustin Fletcher be in that game, though?
Oh, Fletcher.
He might come out of retirement just for the series. As a Freo man, would you like to see like a Nat Fife play?
Well, seeing how good Nat Fife played in the international rules, I think he absolutely excelled at AFLX. Who else played really good? Dane Zorko was really good as well.
Yeah, as a Brisbane man, you'd be a fan of Dane Zorko playing AFLX?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
I
think pretty much the way AFL clubs have to see this is that it's pretty much like a intra-club or practice match. But the fact is, you're not going to be playing as many players. So it's, I don't see, obviously there's any practice match, you're going to have those worries about injuries. So they just got to take it like a normal one and just embrace it.
Correct.
Because it's definitely an opportunity to grow the game.
Yeah.
If you were first, like if you haven't played your debut yet, so drafting, so for free, just say Andrew Bradshaw, who was picked two, you really don't want to make your debut, but not really debut game in AFLX. Like a lot of them do it in the NAB Challenge, JLT, Wizard Cup, you know, back in the early 2000s. That's when they usually play their first game, but you can't really get a taste of AFL if you're playing your first-ish game for AFLX.
Mm.
So I don't really want to see any debuts.
Yeah.
I want to see more, you know, players who's played for a bit.
Yeah, so maybe like those people that are knocking on the door a little bit, have played reserves. But for me personally, I and I'm sure you both agree, I'm just like absolutely gagging for footy. I just want it, and I've been waiting for so long, you know. Any footy.
So many times you can rewatch Richmond's premiership.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty much what Foxtel did. You got all the games, then you got Richmond's premiership run, and best one was AFL Classics. It was AFL Classics, but it wasn't. It was Richmond season. Yeah. So I turned on, I'm like, oh, AFL so Classics.
I remember that as
and
well.
And it was Freo playing Richmond, and when they smashed us by 100 feet points, I'm like, oh, yeah. I was on the edge of my seat of this game.
Boy, oh, boy. I think that was clickbait by Fox Footy, because I actually went to watch it, and then it's just Richmond. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So
already considered a classic, is it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Freo 103-point drubbing.
Hey, that was, whew. 2 weeks in a row as well. Like, who loses by 103-point 2 weeks in a row?
Yeah, that's pretty rough. AFL Women's obviously kicks off this week.
Oh, can't wait for that as well.
One of the more exciting things that they've just announced is that their round two clash, Freo versus Collingwood, 38,000 tickets have already been sold, and they're looking like it's going to be a bit of a sellout, which is then
incredible.
Renewed calls for people to, you know, pay. Should we be paying tickets to go see the games?
I've got two answers. They picked the right team. Mm. It had to be Collingwood.
Yeah.
You know, it couldn't be GWS. Carlton's lost their stigma, their appeal for the last few years, but it had to be Collingwood.
Yeah.
Not yet. Maybe for the bigger games, yes. But it's still new.
Yeah.
The question is, once we start paying, people start losing interest.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big worry.
I think they're only charging $2 though.
Right.
Yeah, so I think...
you could have money for that fish finger sandwich, you know?
That was ridiculous. We'll talk about that on Friday or another day.
$12.
$12.50 for a burger that was... It wasn't even a fish fillet. It was just two fish fingers.
Yeah.
It was just ridiculous. Back to paying. I think it's... I see where they're coming from in terms of free, but if it becomes an issue in terms of crowd control, because obviously... last season, and they're saying also this season, the first match between Carlton and Collingwood will be a lockout.
Yeah.
So for all the fans going there and then not getting in, I think that's going to be a bit disappointing. So I don't see why not charge them a gold coin.
Correct.
To get their ticket online prior to the match, so that way they know they actually can get into the game, and then they can announce whether it's a sellout or not.
Yep.
So I think $2 is fine. I don't think that's going to be too tedious on the most part for the public, and that way the AFLW can actually get a little bit of more money in to support.
Yeah. Correct.
I actually heard that I forget what I was going to say now. No, sorry. I actually heard they're going to redo the stadium.
Oh, yeah, at Icon Park.
Maybe fit more people in.
Which is interesting.
Well, it's been long due.
I don't even know where they stopped paying there. We need a stadium for the Bulldogs.
I'd love to see them bring back suburban venues, though. We can talk about this another day. Maybe I'll chuck this in for next week. But how good would it be to see suburban venues back? Just renovate them and have all the teams play maybe
has wanted for years for Collingwood to play at Victoria Park.
Yeah, that'd just be incredible.
Having that home ground advantage is something Melbourne clubs don't really have.
Well, actually, because I went to Ireland earlier last year and I watched the Gaelic football, and they do the suburban ground. It's just a different feel. Something we've never experienced since, you know, we've lived in the two-stadium era.
Mm. This song here is So Lonely by The Police. You are on Sports Desk with Liam, Ben and Caleb.
Live with
This was So Lonely by The Police on Sin 90.7. This is the Sports Desk with Caden, Liam and Ben. Talking about So Lonely, the AFL women.
I didn't know where you were going to go with that one.
Segue.
Talking about being lonely.
They got absolutely screwed over by Channel 7.
Mm-hmm.
Terms, or maybe the AFL, I don't know who was in charge, having two games in round one played on Channel 7, then only one for the rest of the season. And the biggest question is, if Channel 7 doesn't take it seriously, or the AFL doesn't take it seriously, how are the fans meant to take it seriously?
Bang on. I'm pretty disappointed that they didn't schedule more games. I just feel like the crowd, like I said before, everyone just wants to watch AFL, so maybe it's Married at First Sight or something. They're just, you know, they're putting all these reality TV shows.
2 p.m. in the afternoon on a Saturday. Yeah. They need that slot.
Exactly. And it's pretty disappointing. Fox Sports aren't playing as many games as well, so a lot of people will be watching it on the app, I suppose.
I think maybe they're putting the app, because I think that you can watch it for free on the app.
But still, I mean, the popularity from last season, I mean, surely the AFL Channel 7 can see that there is a huge following and a huge potential for the AFLW to have success. And the fact that they're not showing every game and they're actually showing the AFLX.
Yeah.
They're showing every game of the AFLX, and fair enough for that. But you'd still think the AFLW's got a season up on the AFLX, that they surely got more leverage in terms of broadcasting every game. And I think it's just essential, in particularly to growing the AFLW, because it is so popular right now. And I think the AFL just need to pounce on it, and Channel 7 especially should be broadcasting pretty much nearly every single game.
Yep.
And most people probably watch it from home anyways, as much as the crowds, because after round one, the crowds did die out a bit.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, you know, that's pretty much their first look. We'll see how this is.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Season 2 should be much better than season 1. You know, another year under the belt, they're more prepared.
It's gonna take them. Let's be honest. It will take them a few years to produce. Look, they're probably not going to produce obviously the same amount as the men's, but it's going to take them a couple of years to get used to playing at such a high level so consistently. How long is the season again? Is it 7 rounds this season?
Yeah, plus one grand final.
Yeah, still 7. So they're not professional athletes, and then it's going to take them a while to get used to. I mean, all these TSC Cup teams are now having the women, so they're actually training up now as a young age. So the standard is only going to get better. So I reckon maybe
even in local footy, having a girls team is now it's not the exception; it's the rule.
Yeah, it's the norm.
Yeah, with the AFL women's the teams, it's also very scared for injury. You play 7 games, and you're injured, you miss the entire season, pretty much.
Correct.
Also, with the two teams next year, Geelong and North Melbourne / Tassie, I think the season might go longer. But yeah.
Yeah. We jump to a song, or do you want to go straight into some NBA chat?
I reckon we go straight into some NBA chat.
Let's go.
There was a huge trade that just occurred yesterday. Blake Griffin from the Los Angeles Clippers, Caleb, you may explain this. He's moved to Detroit.
He did. The trade involved the Clippers receiving Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, Boban Marjanovic, and a second-round draft pick. But the Clippers obviously lost Blake Griffin.
First and second round.
First and second round?
Yep.
Oh, wow. That's huge. And then they obviously lost Bryce Johnson, Willie Reed, to Detroit, along with Griffin.
Not Willie Reed.
Is a weird one, because as we were talking about off-air, Liam, you and I, we were saying they're both a little bit around the same mark. So
yeah, in terms of the ladder position, yeah.
Neither team is, like, it doesn't make sense for Blake Griffin to go to Detroit necessarily in chase of championship success. And in the same vein, are Clippers in a worse opposition, and should they be starting rebuilding? I would say yes. I think losing Chris Paul last year and then sort of being neither here nor there this season makes sense for them to sort of clear out their roster and start again. Ben, as an NBA fan, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I reckon this is a really good move from the Clippers. I mean, Blake Griffin, I mean, he's not that old. He's only 28. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we know the potential and how good he has been and how good he is. But he is very injury prone. He is 28. He is on the older side of the 20s. He's nearing 30s. And like you said, losing Chris Paul last season, and the Clippers, they're in that playoff bracket, but they probably won't make it now, obviously, after this trade. But it's really good to see them, that they've actually got a pathway now. And it's good to sell their fans now that it's about the future. So rather than have the mixed messages like it's been in the past seasons, like, oh, were a playoff contender here, and then they just fall after, what, the first or the second round.
Yeah, really, they've struggled, haven't they?
They've been diabolical in the NBA playoffs. So now that they've got rid of Blake Griffin, they are likely to get rid of Lou Williams and DeAndre Jordan. Now there's 10 days left in the trade period, so, and they are shopping them around. So those two are most likely to go. They're looking to the future. They're acquiring their draft picks, getting young talent. Could this be the next Boston Celtics? Who knows? So they'll have enough cap space in a couple of years or even now to pursue a big gun. And if they get all this young talent and they start to turn a couple of games into some wins next season, this is great for the Clippers.
My biggest issue with NBA, it's also NBA and soccer. They're both the same. You build your club. You don't grow your club. You just build them.
Yeah, different to like
Golden State. Like Golden State, there's obviously a lot of talk about them recruiting Kevin Durant. But
I'm not talking about most Cleveland.
Most of their players, Cleveland in terms of buying, but I'm talking about building. Golden State really did build their team. They got Green as what, like a 20 pick. Obviously Curry number 7, Thompson around number 11. So those players were built from the draft.
Same with the Spurs. Spurs.
Yeah. Spurs have always built from the draft.
And hopefully 76ers as well, going that same path.
Trust the process.
Trust the process.
But then you've got teams like Cleveland, who were, they for some reason they went from pretty much last, and LeBron James came and they were first, and they had all these supporters like out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like woof.
Bandwagon.
Wow.
It is one of those sports because there are only 5 people on the court for one team. Getting one person in can make such a huge difference. You wouldn't see that in the AFL where you couldn't buy
one player. I don't know. Geelong's made 2 prelims with a 2-man team, so...
Actually, fair call.
They were always going to lose those, though.
Exactly.
Let's be honest.
All-star voting. Some news this morning. John Wall is injured, which has ignited Australian basketball fans saying that potentially we might see... Ben Simmons back in the All-Star.
Certainly Australians. America probably forgot he was even nominated, but Australians are like, yes.
I don't know. I was reading a few American articles, and they had him, this one I was reading on CBS Sports, they had him at the bottom saying that he's a potential replacement, but other replacement ideas. Maybe Andre Drummond from Detroit, or potentially like a Kemba Walker or a Lou Williams, maybe a little bit more likely.
It'll probably be a Lou Williams, I reckon, because will that replace guard with guard? Will that...
Probably,
most likely.
Cousins came. Paul George came in for Cousins.
So. Well, I suppose that's why maybe Ben Simmons has been thrown in there, because he plays that guard spot.
I think it's just us Aussie fans just hoping. After the voting, if he wasn't getting in the voting, he was never going to get in by the coaches. And it's good to point out. Don't lose hope, Australian fans. LeBron James, he didn't get picked in his first NBA season into the All-Star, so he's still on comparison with LeBron there.
On par.
Yeah, and LeBron are the same person. Yeah.
We don't have enough comparisons of Ben Simmons to LeBron James.
nowhere near enough comparisons between those two. But speaking of the All-Star, there's a new format with the voting. So obviously it's still the same. The top 5 starters from the East and West get picked, and then the next best 8 are selected by the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
But the teams, however, were selected by Team LeBron and Team Curry, and they could be whoever they want.
School rules.
And yeah, exactly. It's rumoured that LeBron went first with Kevin Durant, and let's all be honest, he most likely did that, even though he will not explain, give the order. There's talk about them next season potentially broadcasting the actual picks. But what do we make of the new format? Are we fans of it?
I'm a fan, particularly... I like seeing a few of the old teammates come back together. I like seeing Kyrie and LeBron playing together. Maybe like a bit of...
After an emotional breakup?
Yeah, maybe they'll... a bit like last year when...
But more in terms of East and West combining.
I'm a fan.
I think it's because of the West dominance of the last 5 years. Yeah. Like, even look at this year, I think you pointed out, Boston, who's the number one in the East, a third overall. And it's the one team season this year by far, but...
Correct.
So having maybe better players from both make it much more entertaining to watch.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think I don't mind. I don't mind the change. Might just reinvigorate it a little bit. I do feel like you said that it's been dominated by the West in past years, so hopefully it'll boost it up a little bit.
Yeah, also, the NBA have increased the amount of winnings for the winning team. It's gone up from 50,000 to 100,000.
Oh, wow.
So obviously with the in talks of the lack of competitiveness in the All-Star games, are we going to see a boost in the competitiveness now? Obviously with the East and West now combining, and now the increased salary for the winning
team. Curry earns $22 million per year, so I think he's... I don't think 50,000?
100,000.
100,000.
Still a lot of money.
Well, yeah, if he needs
to, he doesn't want it.
If he needs to blow his nose or something, yeah.
I'll play it.
Like, he might need to blow his nose or jump off his shoe, so he might, you know, find that somewhere. But
use a few $100 notes. Coming up after this one, we're going to be talking about the rugby. You're on Sports Desk.
You're listening to Sports Desk here on Sin 90.7 with Ben, Liam, and Caleb, and we're going to finish up the show with a bit of rugby.
Well, over the weekend, the rugby sevens, or the the tournament was Sydney sevens, but obviously rugby sevens. The Australian women completed something that has never been done before. It was pretty phenomenal. I watched the highlights and they were well above any other team, but they actually didn't concede a point all tournament and won the final 31-0 over New Zealand, who was their arch rivals. This is, of course, the team that won Olympic gold for Australia in Rio. They had a bit of a hiatus. They didn't perform so well in the 2016-17 season after that, but it seems like things are back on track. They're smashing it. Pretty exciting times for rugby in Australia.
Yeah, it's been a while. I know the rugby, we made the World Cup in 2015, but apart from that, rugby union and, well, sevens, pretty much rugby union, it's been down.
It has. And I think in the men's, rugby union certainly dwindled a little bit.
But the women's, in Rio, they really picked it up again after dominating the World Cup.
Huge.
And I don't know if any of you watched the gold medal match, and it was something special.
I think her name was Kaslik. Or Charlotte Kaslik, absolute gun. She, the highlights that I was watching from the weekend just seemed like they were brutal. Any chance they got it, and then they would just smash through the New Zealand team. And it's really, really exciting times for rugby in Australia, and particularly rugby for women. Huge crowd there.
Yeah, not just women, the men's also won. But they did concede a point, so better luck next time, guys. Not as good.
You haven't conceded a point.
That's a disappointing father there. Like, my daughter did better than you, so sorry, son.
Competitive. Yeah. That's all we'll have time for this week. Make sure you tune in on Friday. Sports Desk will be the same time, 9 till 10. And we'll be back for Spolitics next week on Wednesday. We're going to run out with Run the World. This is your choice, Liam. Do you want to explain?
Because the girls dominated, and they're running the world in rugby. And hopefully footy by the start this time next week.
Yep, you've listened to Sports Desk here in Sin 90.7. Girl, we run this mother.